the Eclipse 500 emergency AD controversy. The company responds. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Normally on Mondays, I'm talking with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves on a current safety topic. I had that conversation with Bob early, and we released it on Friday, anticipating that we'd be bringing you expanded coverage on the Eclipse controversy today. A few days ago, the pilot of an Eclipse 500 encountered wind shear at Chicago Midway Airport, and during a go-around maneuver, pushed hard enough on the throttle levers to trigger an engine control fault. He improvised and got the plane down safely, but questions remained. What happened as a result gets complicated, but the National Transportation Safety Board treated the situation as an emergency worthy of press releases. Eclipse maintains it took the lead on resolving this problem early in the week and questions the approach of the NTSB. ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell got the chance to talk about the matter directly with Eclipse CEO Vern Rayburn, and you'll hear that conversation today. Keep in mind when you hear references such as yesterday and tomorrow that this interview was recorded on Friday.
Well, once again, our buddy Vern Rayburn is in the hot seat. Welcome to your world, right?
Yes, sir.
Vern, there's a bit of a storm here going on over an incident that occurred with apparently airframe number 26 in Eclipse 500 about a week ago that got the attention of the FAA and the NTSB and has been portrayed in various and usually inaccurate ways in the general media. Can you explain exactly what happened that led up to this particular scenario, starting with the incident itself?
Sure. Let me give you the facts as opposed to the speculation that so many of the, quote, experts are engaging in right now. The fact is that we had a pilot on approach in the Midway who got caught in some wind shear, and he did exactly the right thing. And I want to start out by saying this guy did a great job. And I have nothing but praise for the work that he did as a pilot of the airplane. He pushed the throttles forward with, shall we say, a sense of urgency. It happens sometimes when you get in one of these situations. And when he did, he managed to push hard enough that the thrust levers went past a design limit that we measure in terms of throttle lever angle position. That, in turn, generated a engine control fault. Now, the Eclipse is different than other jets in that when you get an engine control fault, the engine fails fixed, meaning it fails in the position it was when the thrust levers got the fault. That was by design, and the FAA loves that design because what it says is that the engine, instead of faulting and then rolling back to idle like most FADEC-equipped aircraft do, you get what you got when you have that fault. In this case, he had commanded full thrust, and so the thrust levers all the way forward, when they faulted, he got full thrust on both engines. Now, we did not adequately anticipate a dual engine control fault, and so we did not have an adequate procedure in the AFM and the flight manual that said, here's what you do. The pilot improvised some, did a great job, got the airplane back on the ground. So we understand the what happened, because we have a data collection unit. We collect 6 megabytes of data per hour flight, so we were able to determine precisely exactly what had happened. What we haven't been able to determine yet is the why, other than the fact that we know the pilot pushed too hard on the thrust levers. So that started the investigation. We were involved from the very, very beginning. We downloaded the data. We shared the data with the NTSB. We shared the data with the FAA. And from there, we determined that we needed to communicate immediately to our customers exactly what had happened. So by Tuesday morning, we had sent out a communication to all of our pilots and all of our customers saying, we have discovered there can be an exceedance of a design limit that will cause an engine control fault. So be careful. Don't push too hard on the thrust levers. As soon as we figure out why you can get this kind of control fault, we will correct it. We sent that out Tuesday morning. In the meantime, we started, I should add, we also told the NTSB about this, the FAA about this. The FAA was very complimentary. The NTSB was very complimentary at both, one, our analysis of the situation, and two, our very rapid communication to our customer base. From there, we said, we've got to come up with a procedure because, again, we didn't anticipate a dual engine control fault in this unique situation. We wrote a new flight manual procedure that lets the pilot clear this fault, regain full control of the engines. We had that drafted by Tuesday night. We sent that to the FAA early Wednesday morning because, as you know, the FAA has to approve any change that we make in the flight, in the AFM, in the airplane flight manual. That process was ongoing through Wednesday. By Wednesday night, we were all collectively satisfied. It was a good procedure. It didn't have any unintended consequences. And we were preparing to send out an AD. Now, an AD is the only way the FAA can legally communicate with any customer or any, you know, installed database. By regulation, they have to do it through AD. We told the NTSB we were doing that on Thursday morning, yesterday. We sent another communication to our customer saying, there is an AD coming. Now, I would add at this point, I think we've responded faster and better than any other airframe company to a situation that, frankly, is a design tolerance issue that was exceeded, and that's a very, very manageable situation. From there, everything was going along, and then suddenly, Thursday afternoon, the NTSB, in an emergency safety communique and a press release saying, boy, we think this really needs to be done, tells the world what we should be doing. Of course, we had already done it. Of course, the FAA had already done it. And of course, we had already told the NTSB we were already doing it, which makes us really kind of wonder where the heck did this come from on the part of the NTSB, since it's very obvious, really all they're looking for is getting some publicity in the middle of the summer when it's dead in Washington, D.C. So that was through late yesterday afternoon. Last night, we actually sent the AD before the FAA sent it. We sent it to all our customers. This morning, all of our fleet customers inspected their aircraft. They're back in the air because the inspection showed there was no problem whatsoever with the airplane. And we're continuing to develop this. Now, the other big mystery here, the NTSB actually has in their physical possession the throttle quadrant that failed in Chicago. Didn't truly fail. It was just an exceedance of a limit again. There's no expediency, there's no urgency on the part of the NTSB to actually examine that. And in fact, they've put off our request to disassemble that and examine it and see if there is damage or see if there's a failure inside it until next week.
Wait a second, Bert. Let me get this straight here.
Yep.
We have an emergency order out. We have a whole bunch of consternation, hullabaloo, chest beating, so forth and so on. Emergency. This has got to get done. And yet, the device that failed at the middle of this is not being disassembled and inspected?
Still in the NTSB's possession, and they're going to get to it sometime next week.
Doesn't sound like much of an emergency, does it?
Sort of one of the big mysteries to us. And so we're going to participate, as we have from the very beginning, with the NTSB, with the FAA, on getting to the bottom of the why. Not the what, but the why. Now, our own analysis at this point, which is still incomplete because we don't have the physical evidence, is that this is a really simple problem for us to solve. It's going to be a simple software change that will allow us to expand the range of what condition can generate the fault. But we want to understand before we go and do that change that that really is the only thing that we need to do. And until we get the throttle quadrant and we can actually disassemble it and actually examine it and find out if there was or was not any damage, we can't make that determination. So we're, as I say, one, really delighted with the relationship we've had with the FAA. They've been very, very responsive. They have worked with us in a collaborative fashion to get this information out and into our customer base. We've been able to lead the way, both certainly of the NTSB and with the FAA in terms of communicating to our customers. Our customer feedback has been, this is great, thank you, we understand. We just won't slam the throttle forward really hard. That's all you have to do to avoid this problem. And we may, fairly soon, and we'll do it sooner than otherwise would typically be done, as soon as we can understand what we have to do to prevent this from ever happening again, we'll make that change.
We'll be back in a moment with more on the Eclipse 500 AD controversy with CEO Vern Rayburn and ANN's Jim Campbell. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News. This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin WAS GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without loss, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. ANN's Jim Campbell is discussing the Eclipse 500 emergency AD controversy with CEO Vern Rayburn.
What kind of force was required to meet these kind of exceedances?
Our best guess at this point is that it was over 40 pounds applied at the top of the thrust lever. So if you're sitting in a seat and you reach forward and you grab a handful of throttles and you want to push on both of them, you have to exceed 40 pounds on both of them. So it's additive. It isn't directly additive. But you got to really kind of push on that. So it's a little bit like bench pressing with just one hand or lifting, you know, a dead weight in your hand with, you know, 40 or 50 pounds of weight.
And for those of us who come from a piston background, for those who may not be familiar with FADEC type thrust levers, we're talking about a device with very little mechanical drag, i.e., it's not a mechanical throttle as we're used to in a piston or in a number of other aircraft or an old style turbine aircraft. This is basically a lever attached to a computer.
That's right. It's really attached. There's in the throttle quadrant there are four independent potentiometers, two on each thrust lever, specifically so we have redundancy in the system and we can't have a failure of just one and cause a loss of thrust control. So it's a very redundant, very robust design. But it's also a design that doesn't have a friction lock on the throttle pedestal or the throttle quadrant. It's a set level of friction, which means it always is the same amount of friction no matter where you are, which means also you don't have to constantly adjust and readjust the friction lock like you might be used to on a more traditional piston aircraft, and even in some cases some of the earlier turboprop aircraft.
Well, my experience with the aircraft suggests that it wasn't too hard to motivate the power levers at any point. And further, way back when I was flying with Terry during our first flight, you know, one of the first things that I was invited to do was go out and do throttle slams, and I don't think I was anywhere near 40 pounds, but, you know, just, you know, bring it up quick and this, that, and the other. And so I'm a little curious how you produce enough force under the circumstance to produce this kind of thing, this kind of result.
Well, you know, when things are getting a little touchy, the adrenaline's pumping and people can do amazing things. And you know, I guess that we maybe underestimated how much force could be applied in such a situation, which is what we saw. You know, some people have said, well, gosh, obviously, Eclipse cut corners. That's the only way they can do an inexpensive airplane. They inadequately tested the aircraft. And I'd only point out that, you know, with 200-plus airplanes in the field and now 24,000-plus hours of fleet time, this is the first time we've ever seen this occurrence happen. Any complex device, be it an airplane, a car, even a computer, you're going to find problems over the service life. We saw a Boeing 777 crash in the UK because the engine controls didn't work, and that's after the safest airliner ever introduced into service, 12 years of service, without a single incident. Suddenly, something happened. Then it happened again on another 777 in coming to Los Angeles about 90 days ago, and yet we haven't seen the NTSB issue yet another emergency safety recommendation. So once again, we're somewhat mystified by all this. Do I believe the 777 is a safe airplane? I want to go on record emphatically as saying it is the safest airplane. I would fly it anywhere, and I have over the years. And whatever this problem was, Boeing and Rolls-Royce will work it out, and they will fix it. That's what you do with any device, car, airplane. As you go through the service life, and whether it's caused by wear, whether it's caused by a state that was never conceived in the design phase, you find that problem, you fix it. We already have a mitigation strategy for the problems that concur, And when the NTSB finally gets around to letting us disassemble it, we'll find out what we have to do to make sure that this never occurs again, even with the mitigation strategy.
Well, let's cut to brass tacks here, Byrne. I'm going to ask two simple questions, and let's see what we come up with. First question is, what went right?
Well, what went right was the pilot did a great job because he had been trained, and he responded to his training. And even though we didn't give him all the tools he needed to do this, he did a great job of getting the airplane back on the ground. No damage to the aircraft, no injuries to anybody. And so that's always the first criteria. And I'm very proud and I'm very grateful that it did work that way. The second thing that went right is because of the way we designed the 500 with all of our onboard data collection capability, we were able to figure out exactly what happened in less than 24 hours. That in turn led us over a weekend put together a communication that we got out to our customers within about 72 hours that said, don't do this to avoid this problem. That in turn led to an ability to say, here's a new procedure. If you do this, how you resolve it. And we were able to get that communicated in a legally binding form, an AD, within another 72 hours. That's pretty record response in terms of timing and in terms of accuracy. And I'm pretty proud of that, and I'm proud of our relationship with the FAA and the way we're able to do that.
Okay. Here's the other side of the question. What went wrong?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. We are, again, mystified by this reaction, by the necessity of the NTSB to send out an urgent press release saying, we want this done, when it's already done and it's already in process, and they know that. And so we're deeply puzzled by the response from the NTSB, particularly when you add in on top of that the lack of urgency from the NTSB to get to the real root cause by disassembling the suspect or the incident throttle quadrant.
And yet you still had a situation where once an engine was shut down, the remaining engine throttled back. Can you explain exactly how that occurred?
That occurred because of some logic in the system that the aircraft worked precisely as it was designed and certified, which is because this is an all-electronic system, as you point out. When the pilot shut down one of the engines, which was sort of the improvision that I mentioned in terms of the process, that in turn cleared the fault. That meant that the computer now said, oh, we have one good engine, which happens to be the engine that's now dead because it was purposely shut down, and we infer what the thrust lever position should be for the other engine where the fault is. So he had actually retarded the thrust lever back to idle, which in turn said, the computer said, oh, that must be where the pilot wants the thrust to be, which is at idle. So it idled, it throttled the good engine back to idle, even though it was at full thrust, which made the pilot have to say, oh, let's get on the ground right now. Now, this is not intuitive. We admit this, and you know, we need to put a better procedure into the manual, which is what we've done that explains this, because at that point, the pilot could have actually controlled the left engine with the thrust lever from the right engine, even though the right engine was shut down.
Interesting.
So that was a design, and what this was a design to attempt to, when something's going wrong, to find a way to make sure, to find any way to keep everything working. And perhaps that was too clever by a half, and we're reexamining that right now along with the FAA, and that's going to be one of the issues that, once again, when we get the chance to fully understand exactly what happened, or maybe I should say why it happened, we may make a design change on that.
Now, are there other similar such systems in the civil fleet?
Not that we're aware of. It's as usual. It's unique because of the way Eclipse approaches things and our willingness to do and try different things.
And I would assume that Pratt & Whitney had an awful lot to say as this system went together.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Pratt & Whitney was very, very involved in this. There's a lot of eyes that have looked at this. But once again, you can, any design process on any complex product, you will not anticipate, you will not see, you will not go through every single possible scenario that could possibly happen. Again, that's why we see ADs coming out on aircraft like Boeing 707s almost 50 years on, because you continue to find these problems. And the more digital the aircraft is, because we're still learning some of this technology, the the more potential there is to do something like that. Did the aircraft get lots and lots of testing? Absolutely. Have we seen these kind of problems? Frankly, this is the first one. And after 200 airplanes and nearly 2 years of flight, we feel pretty good about the airplane now.
Well, personally, I think if you really want to find out everything that can go wrong with an airplane, you need to loan me one for a year or two. And believe me, I will find a way to break it. I have great faith in my ability to screw it up.
Well, there's a lot of people, and back when I was in the software business, I used to be accused of having a black thumb because I could break almost anything that the engineers thought was unbreakable. And so that's why I've flown the airplane a lot. But I have to tell you, now hundreds of hours of time in the Eclipse, this is a phenomenally safe airplane. This is a phenomenally reliable airplane. This is a phenomenally easy airplane to operate. We had a situation here, and we're going to fix it.
Interesting. Well, we're looking forward to getting a little bit more data down the line, and please let us know when you have a chance to go through that particular assembly what you find. I think that would be intriguing, to say the least.
Well, hopefully the NTSB is going to develop the same sense of urgency as they have over sending out press releases, and we'll actually get into this thing here shortly.
We look forward to following up with you, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim Campbell is ANN's editor-in-chief. Vern Rayburn is president and CEO of Eclipse Aviation. We'll have more on this story as details become available. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.